I'm John Krall. Coming up on No Limits, we're going to talk about the families that are created when parents and children have to find each other. We're going to talk about adoption. We're going to talk about the joys and the challenges of adopting children. We will have this discussion with a great group of guests. Jill Budnick of The Villages, Bill Stanjakiewicz, who is President, CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, and Gil Michelini, a Fishers resident, adoptive father, and the author of Daddy, Come and Get Me. You can join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits about Adoption Month. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, as I said, we've got a great group of guests here, and I'd like to introduce them. Jill Budnick, who is with The Villages. Jill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
It's good to have you here. Bill Stanjakiewicz, welcome back to the program. Bill is the president and CEO of Indiana Youth Institute. Bill, it's good to have you here.
John, thank you, and congratulations to you and Sharon on the continued success of No Limits. This is a wonderful show in our community and now across the state.
Oh, great. Well, thank you for the plug. The Sharon, by the way, is Sharon Allseth, who is our brilliant producer here. And Gil Michelini, who is a Fishers resident, adoptive father, and author of the book, Daddy, Come and Get Me. Gil, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, John.
It is good to have you all here. Well, I want to start first by talking a little bit, and I think I'll start with Gil on this one. Could you tell us your adoption story? I mean, how you came to be an adoptive father.
Mm-hmm. We started our adoption process in August of 2000. I knew it was something I always wanted to do, to adopt. I can't tell you why exactly. Even when I was in middle school, I always knew I wanted to adopt a child internationally. At first, I thought it was going to be a son from Italy, but that didn't work out. I looked at China because everybody was adopting from China back then. And through various activities that occurred, we ended up adopting a daughter from Guatemala. My wife was not real excited about the process, so it was kind of me pushing along and pulling her in the process. We had three biological daughters mm-hmm. at the time, and it took 20 months before we were able to adopt, meet our daughter for the first time in May of 2002 and brought her home. She's now 12 and has been with us just over 10 years.
And, Bill, you're also adoptive father, right?
A story very similar to Gil. We have three biological children, and we adopted Sam from Guatemala, and he's 10 years old.
10 years, so about the same time,
yes.
Then, maybe right around then. And, Jill Budnick, I'll ask you to talk a little bit about what The Villages is to get us started.
Okay. The Villages is a licensed not-for-profit agency who works with children and families, both to help children who need families and families who need children. And we are focusing a lot on adoption lately. 30-some percent of the kids who are in the Indiana system right now have the goal of finding an adoptive parent. And so being a part of that process is very exciting for us. We also want to help families prepare for this wonderful journey they're going to go on and to support them after the journey begins and follow up once they have adopted. We are working on developing a therapy credential for adoption across the state. We're bringing this out from the Center for Adoption Services and Education from Baltimore. And we're going to start that training in January. It'll be the first for this state. So all those things are in process. And right now we're helping hundreds of kids every year find that special forever home.
Well, that gives us sort of a, we'll start with a broader perspective here real quickly. how many children are there in the state of Indiana who are waiting to be adopted?
I think there's around 3,000. I was looking at statistics, trying to anticipate what you might ask me today. In 20,
well, you got one right there.
Yeah, 2010.
You're off to a good start.
In 2010, there was around 3,000. And of the 12,000 that were in the Indiana system. And I imagine that holds true. Of the kids who are part of the wardship court system, it's usually around 27%, a little over a quarter to a third, who have that goal up for adoption. But that's just one piece of the puzzle. Those special needs adoptions, children who have got into the system, but they're private, domestic, international, as these guys can attest to and been involved in. So adoption's very widespread, and anymore, you know, most family systems have a firsthand experience of adoption, step-parent kinship. We're a new society in looking at and expanding our roles with children.
Well, and that's the part I guess I want to get at. That one way is looking at how many children there are out there who are waiting to adopt. How many adopted children are there in the state or country? If not just the international adoptions, but as you say, the step parents who adopt children, or relatives who end up adopting children in the events of family deaths.
I don't think that anyone really tracks, because they consider all these different adoption components, whether it's domestic, international, special needs, kinship, as their own little tracks, and no one kind of pulls all those figures together. But I know it's a huge number. It's a huge number.
John, I can say at the Indiana Youth Institute, we're in the data business, and it's about 4.6% of Indiana children are adopted, either through foster care domestically or internationally. And I was just trying to do the number really quick. It's 4.6% of 1.6 million children. So 10% would be 160,000, 5% would be 80,000. So
a little
maybe
bit less
70,000 to 75,000 kids in the state are adopted one way or another.
Boy, that's a lot of children.
That's a lot of children.
You know, a good-sized city, probably, what, the fourth or fifth?
Yeah, right.
Size city and largest city in the state. Well, Gil, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more. You say that this was, an interest that you have had from, middle school or whatever. What, can you talk a little bit about what prompted you to think that this was something that you really, really wanted to do? I know I'm pushing you to say something you haven't really been able to articulate.
But. Yeah, and as I was working on the
and
book.
And this is also a chance for you to plug your book a little bit.
Thank you. Appreciate that. As I was working on the book, I was trying to come up with an answer, and I really don't have a good one. Just, the boy who always wants to be a baseball player or a cricket player or something like that. I just knew I wanted to adopt internationally. And when my wife and I got married, it was something that she wasn't necessarily interested in, as a lot of people are. I just don't know that I could handle someone who was not biologically mine, which a lot of people struggle with when they consider adoption. So it was something we put on hold. We had the three biological daughters, and then we were kind of wanting to have a family of four, and things just weren't working out that way. So that kind of rekindled, hey, you remember that dream of adoption I had years ago? Maybe it's something I want to pursue. So the opportunities came up to start looking at it again, and doors began to open.
What was the genesis of the book?
The genesis of the book was a log that I kept during the adoption process, just to report to the people we had asked money for. Some folks donated money to allow us to do it. And then also just for myself, record my thoughts. Once we were done with the adoption process, one thing I realized after going through the process, there were not a lot of men's voices. Mm-hmm. A lot of women push adoptions. A lot of the adoption community is female. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to have a man's voice out there to say, hey, this is what I went through, and guys, do you want to consider adoption? These are some of the things as a man we want to think about, bringing another child into our family that may not look like us or may not have been biologically related to us. So that's how I started working on the book. Once I got started in my first draft, I realized how horrible it was. And
a lot of writers have that
experience. I really didn't know how to write. So I spent a couple years just trying to figure out how to write a book. So it took me almost 6 years to bring the book to press.
We're talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Bill Stanjakovich, I'd like to talk a little bit more about your personal journey toward adoption, too. Similar to Gil's, it sounds like, in the specifics, but each one of these, because they're human stories, are individual. You know, what was the driver or the motivator in your case?
Well, I'm sitting here wondering, as a father of four children as well, how Gil found any time to write a book, because the kids are awesome, and it's a wonderful way to spend a lot of time as we raise them. For our story, John, it starts with my dear girlfriend and wife, Carmen. We've been married now 20 years. Mm-hmm. At about the 8 or 9 year mark of our marriage, we had a son and a daughter biologically. Will is now almost 17. Grayson is now 14. And I thought, son and a daughter, we're done. Mm-hmm. And Carmen said, they're not all here yet. And Elena came into our family. And now Elena is going to be 12 years old here as the holidays approach. And I thought, okay, three children. And Carmen said, they're not all here yet. And I think we really need to adopt. And that was an interesting new idea for me to get my brain and my heart around. And we continued to talk about it a lot between the two of us. We continued to pray about it significantly. I at the Indiana Youth Institute, we serve people who serve kids. And in my volunteer work, I volunteered at places like Shepherd Community Center and Gyra Sports, serving especially low-income kids. And so my wife, being my partner and soulmate, knew where to reach. And she said, well, you know, you work at IYI and you volunteer at these youth helping organizations. You can bring one of those children into your own home. And it's like, you know, really? Of course you're right. You know, it was like the ultimate point. And that, and again, continued prayer and continued talking with key family members and friends, I finally saw the light that she had seen earlier. And we wonderfully welcomed Sam into our family. He was born in July of 2002, and as I said, now 10 years old. And I wanted to touch on something Gil said. People wonder, can I hold a child who is not my own? That doesn't even enter your mind. There isn't this my own about it at all. We went to Guatemala, All God's Children is the ministry that we adopted through, and they bring Sam out. And, of course, Carmen, as mom, she holds him first, and they handed Sam to me. And he put his head on my shoulder and fell asleep.
Yeah.
He didn't say, this dad isn't my own. Yeah. From that point on, they're your child. And there's no difference between, I can assure you, zero difference between Sam, who's adopted, and Will, Grayson, and Elena, who are biological. We have four children. The kids know that, and as mom and dad, we know that too.
Well, I'm really struck by, you know, that phrase, they're not all here yet.
Yeah.
You know, that your wife, it sounds like there was a really profound or powerful spiritual component to all of this. I don't want to delve too deeply into your private personal life, but if you're comfortable talking about it, I'd like to hear more.
Well, and John, I want to be respectful. We wonderfully live in a diverse society, yeah, a pluralistic society, and Carmen and I, we honor that. Since you asked, our particular story has a faith component. We believe we're created by God and invited into His family. The Bible talks about us being adopted by God into His family, and it was that spiritual understanding that led us to adopt Samuel. And by the way, Samuel, he's named for the Old Testament Samuel. Hannah strives for a child, wants a child, and she says, God, if you give me a son, I will name him Samuel, which means dedicated to God, and that led to our son being named Samuel.
And he's how old now?
He's 10 years old now. He's the most joy-filled person you are ever going to meet. And I tell everybody, we're all going to work for him someday. He's the kid who just lights up a room. Everybody gravitates to Sam, and just a wonderful part of our family.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Gil, you mentioned that I want to deal with this fairly quickly, that you had to do some fundraising to make this happen. How expensive a process is this, roughly?
My lovely little daughter is a $25,000 daughter.
A $25,000 daughter. And what all was involved in that?
A lot of that is legal fees for attorneys here in the United States and the representation in Guatemala as well.
Oh, boy. So it is a significant outpouring, obviously, to do this. We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Jill Budnick, who is with the Villages, Bill Stanjakiewicz, who is president and CEO of the Indiana Youth Institute, and author Gil Michelini, who has written the book Daddy, Come and Get Me. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about adoption. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jill Budnick of the Villages, Bill Stanjakiewicz, who is the president and CEO of Indiana Youth Institute, and Gil Michelini, who is a Fishers resident, adoptive father, and author of Daddy, Come and Get Me. We've gotten a question from a listener named Mike in Noblesville. Says, does Indiana allow adoption with same-sex partners?
Yes.
I will throw that one to Jill Budnick. She's the one who's nodding affirmatively here.
Yes, they do. Is there some bias in certain areas? Certainly, but on the record,
what do you mean by bias?
Well, you know, when people apply for put their home studies in to be considered for a child, I think sometimes there's some bias in selecting those families. But on the record, yes, we do allow same sex.
And we've gotten also an email question from a listener named Melissa. It says, how does Indiana handle step-parent adoption? The biological mother has little contact but does pay court-ordered support. Should I consult a lawyer for this type of adoption? What steps would the panel recommend?
Yes.
Jill Budnick.
Yes, you need a lawyer. The lawyer will lead you to what documents you need to take care of the step-parent adoption, everything you need to have done. We often do step-parent studies for people to help them get all the paperwork they need on that side of things, social service, clinical side, to file with the court through their attorney. You know, one of the things I want to jump in and talk is I came into this field because in high school I met a young lady and quickly came home and asked my parents to be foster parents because I felt sorry for her. She was the oldest of four kids, and they deemed her in sixth, seventh grade to be too old to be adopted at that time. They couldn't find a family for her. So they adopted all her siblings out from underneath her. Her brothers went to one home. Her sister went to another home and left her and said, you can't have any contact with them until they're all 18. So that was a heartbreaker, and it made me aware of this field. And I still hate to see children split up who need families. And there are a lot of children, older children and sibling groups that are looking for adoptive parents. And so if anyone out there is listening to this, I know sometimes it's hard to think, oh, I'm gonna adopt one, two, three, four kids is an overwhelming thing to think about. But there are kids out there, and they need these homes, and there's a lot of support that you can get to help through the whole process, because we don't want to see these kids split up and lose each other if they've lost their families already. So we really need people for those special needs ages. And, you know, if you're even just thinking about it, you know, you can call, you know, my company, you can call other agencies. They have information nights. You know, there's kind of a no risk, no one's going to judge you. Come in and, you know, talk about it.
We've also gotten a couple of tweets here that comments from listeners who say they want to affirm what Gail and Bill said about there is no difference between biological children and adoptive children. Just wanted to show their support to your statement.
Yes.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Tobin, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just wanted to piggyback on what Jill was just saying. There are so many kids that are considered special needs because they're sibling groups or because they're of their age. And my partner and I went through the adoption process. We're a same-sex couple. We went through the adoption process in Indiana 2 years ago next month. And I just want to say we met with absolutely no resistance. There were no roadblocks. We felt completely respected, and we felt that our family was treated just the same as everyone else. And so if there's anybody that's listening that's considering adoption as a same-sex couple, I definitely think the foster care system is one of the best ways to go. We got we were lucky enough to be placed with a 3- and a 6-year-old set of brothers who had been in foster care since they were babies. And like your other guest has said, the minute that we met them, we felt like they were our children. And I have a picture of my youngest son. The very first time I held him, he put his head on my shoulder and fell asleep. And so it's wonderful to hear stories like this from other people.
Thank you, Tobin, very much for calling and sharing that story with us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, stories like that, I would think, have got to be somewhat affirming. They also raise, though, a kind of question. I mean, with any child in a family, there are issues of integrating the child into the family. In what ways might they be different with an adoptive children, with an adoptive child or biological, or is there no difference? I'm speaking out of ignorance here.
We didn't experience a lot of differences. We celebrate a gotcha day with Gemma, mm-hmm. which is the day that we first met her, May 18th. We don't celebrate that with the other girls. And when they were younger, it was, hey, why does Gemma get one extra special day?
Birthday,
a birthday and a gotcha day.
Because kids are good at keeping score like that.
Absolutely. And it was, we weren't there at her birth. We didn't know her for her first 20 months. So we'll give her one more special day. And the girls accepted that. And I want to, something that Bill said, there was a time when Gemma, I think she was about 4 years old, and she came up and put her arm next to mine, and she said, you know, you're a different color than I am,
mm-hmm.
which usually as Caucasians, it's you're a different color than me. But for her to realize that I was the one who was different, it wasn't her.
It was a different experience. Bill.
John, I was going to say that the big difference was just all the legal things that needed to happen. When the three oldest children were born to Carmen and I biologically, you're in the hospital, you fill out the paperwork, they start the process to get the official birth certificate. It's easy to get that birth certificate translated into a Social Security card and Social Security number, done. So with Samuel, he is born in Guatemala, which, by the way, this is going to be interesting to watch. You're a public policy guy. According to our Constitution, Gil and our adopted children can never be present in the United States. But I wonder, as more kids get adopted, is that going to change? Because Sam came here when he was all 6 months old. Anyway, I bring that up to say, under federal law, Sam became a U.S. citizen when he crossed a port of entry with his now legal parents, Carmen and I. So we landed in Atlanta. We walked through the gate there in the international area. Sam is now a U.S. citizen. Much to our surprise, about a week later, I don't know if this happened to you, Gil, John, we got a green card with Sam's photo on it, little six-month-old Sam, entering the United States on a student visa. So here's little Doogie Howser, six months old, on a student visa. It took us almost 5 years to untangle that with our federal government. And I'll give a shout out to Senator Lugar, who developed a wonderful expertise in many international areas. It was only because of Susan Briette and others on Senator Lugar's staff that helped us untangle all of those knots, get his name changed legally in time for schooling to start by the time he was in kindergarten. So other than that, customs, culture, birthdays, it's all the same. That beginning process with all the legal documents, it took us a while to untangle that.
Well, and I was thinking more of sort of the practical. And Jill Budnick, since you deal with these things, you may be able to jump in. You know, I know my wife and I have two biological children. Mm-hmm. And there are issues of integration, particularly with the second child. You have to adapt to the fact that you've lost the advantage of numbers.
Right. Yeah, I have two sons, too.
You no longer outnumber them. But then the other part of it is really explaining to the other child that in our case, it was our daughter, that at a very young age, you're not the only one anymore. You know, there is this. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get, those practical parenting things.
There are a lot of practical parenting things. And, you know, one of the things that someone said to me recently on an international adoption is that when you adopt a child from another country, if they're from Guatemala, you become Guatemalan. And your whole family does, because you now are one unit and you're all part of that. And it helps the child with their cultural background and how they're going to interface with society and all those issues that come up, even when you adopt an infant. When you're talking about an older child, they come with memories that you need to figure out what their story is and help them clarify what they remember. And then figure out what, you know, as much as you can, what actually did happen, because those are often very different things.
But it's part of their experience. So you have to honor that.
Yes,
too.
You have to honor it. And that's all part of, you know, helping the family integrate those experiences with them and finding what we call the adoption story and documenting it and making it a part for all the members of the family.
John, if I could interject.
Bill Stanjakovich, please.
Yeah, I was just going to say, some great advice that Carmen and I received. An organization called Bethany Christian Services did our home study, and they provide you with a social worker, and they prepare you for this. One of the great pieces of advice Lena Blanchard gave us was, don't treat your adopted child as a charity case. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an orphan, literally, coming from a country with 85% poverty. Do not treat them like a charity case. And so that's very important for adoptive parents to know, too, because you might, when it comes to guiding and disciplining and teaching, go, oh, well, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt because you're this charity case. Oh, no. You are as equal, fully same standing as all the people in this household, with the same love and the same expectations. So that was a huge thing for us to understand as we brought Sam in. The other thing I would say is the group we worked with, All God's Children, they immediately sent us a photo of Sam to show you how old he is. They sent us VHS tapes of him every 3 weeks that we watched together as a family. We left his photo out in a common area in our home. And I'll tell you, when Sam came home, when Carmen and I brought him home, it was just like, oh, our brother's home. It was just very matter of fact because of that lead up with the photos and the video. So, again, helping integrate that way is important, and not treating the child as some sort of charity case is absolutely essential.
Now, well, and I guess I would toss this out, because I am, after all, a father. The real test of whether a child has been integrated fully into the family is whether the siblings actually fight.
Lots of girl fights.
we talk about
Joe Budnick
in entitlement. Mm-hmm. You know, that child's entitled to everything your other children have, everyone in the family has, and that you're entitled to be their parent.
Yes.
Because sometimes parents hold back, and somehow it takes a while for them to feel that entitlement that you're mine, I'm yours. It's just the same, and I'm entitled to parent you and have, you know, the guidelines and restrictions and all the things we do with our children.
We're talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Gotten an email question from a listener named Megan, who says, I am beginning to start the foster to adopt program with the state. I am a state employee, so finances are tight. I have begun making handmade goods and selling them to raise money for the incidentals of a child. Are there ways to raise money other than that, as my fees to adopt will not be as great as an international adoption? I'll toss that one out to anyone who feels like it. I saw Gil nodding his head up and down. Mm-hmm. What ways did you use to raise money?
the one way I had to do just to get out of my own comfort zone is I asked people for money, mm-hmm. and that brought a lot of it in. Then we had to get a second mortgage on the house.
Oh, boy.
But I know there are many more creative ways. At that time, I wasn't as creative as other people are now. But there are a lot of organizations out there, and I'll bet Bill or Jill both know of some places.
Bill Stanchuk.
Yeah, Gil, more and more faith communities, they're very accustomed to the teenagers or families saying, we're going to go on a mission trip. Can people help us out? And now we see families saying, hey, we're going to adopt a child. And people will put money in. There are some foundations. I know the Christian artist Stephen Curtis Chapman has a foundation. Mm-hmm. He'll make some financial grants. His family has adopted, and he's using some of his wealth to grant that out. We need to make people aware, John, there's a federal mm-hmm. tax credit for people who adopt and to plan for that. I will say, Carmen and I, we did borrow against our home a little bit. We planned for it. We paid it back. But there are different creative ways to do that. And I would just encourage this listener to, as Gil said, talk to family, talk to friends, talk to relationships, and you might find some people who are able to help you.
Jill, are there other ways that one can be creative in meeting this financial challenge?
Well, you know, if you're going strictly for adoption, you pay more of the fees. You know, if you say, I don't want to take any risk, I only want a job for adoption. If you're going foster to adopt, usually a lot of the work, the home study, the training is available to you at no charge at all. And then as time, you know, the legal fees and those sort of things, you know, will come out of your own pocket when you get to that point. A lot of children are adopted who are what we call at risk. They're in foster care, but things aren't going well and they think they're going to become free for adoption. But people have to really open their hearts wide and be open to that child going back to their family, and also being available, what they call concurrent planning, to be that forever family if that's the way things go too. So that is a more reasonable cost.
We've gotten a Facebook question comment from a listener named Kara, who says, when we could not have biological children, adoption was a natural path because at that time I was working at an adoption agency in Indy. We adopted our oldest daughter from Russia. We wanted to add more children to our family, but international adoption was becoming more expensive and difficult with all the changes in countries. I had a dear friend who works with foster children who urged us to look into the foster to adopt program, and we are now parents of toddler twins. We were scared to foster to adopt because of so many horrible stories we had heard, but our journey was good. We have been encouraging other families to look into adding to their family through foster care as well. How much of this, I mean, there are obviously, there is a real stereotype out there about foster children that to some degree we have to confront. Would you like to speak to that, Jill?
Well, you know, I've never met a child I didn't like. So yeah. that being said, I have seen some maybe I don't want to take home. But, you know, that's just, there are wonderful kids out there. And a lot of them do come in with issues and they present behaviors. But I always say my own children would be much worse if they had had those life experiences. And you have to take it in perspective to what's happened with these kids, the instability, those sort of things. Kids, I always said I like to work with children because they don't fight getting better, as us adults do often.
Oh.
And they're much more open to growth and health. And you give them an opportunity and they will flourish, you know. And if they have special needs and they have, you know, medications or therapies they need, there are those things out there. And it's a developing field in adoption and behaviors. But I've seen wonderful things happen. So
if you can talk in just a few seconds about, you know, what qualities someone who wants to enter into a foster care program, who wants to parent in that situation.
Well, first, you have to really want to parent. And that may seem obvious, but, you know, that's the number one thing. Then I think you have to be flexible and put yourself out there and get involved with a good agency and commit yourself to the process and the time.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. My guests are Jill Budnick, Bill Stanjakovich, and Gil Michelini. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about adoption. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Jill Budnick of The Villages. Bill, that sounds almost like The Village People, doesn't it?
Yes,
I probably should be careful with that.
Yes.
Bill Stanjakovich, who is the president and CEO of Indiana Youth Institute, and Gil Michelini, who's a Fishers resident, adoptive father, and author of the book, Daddy Come and Get Me. Again, you can call us at 1-866-476-3881. Francisco, welcome to the program.
How are you, sir? Good morning. Good evening.
Certainly. Your question, please.
Well, we are trying to get into the process of adoption. My wife is a teacher, and I think she's very well qualified, and I used to be a psychologist in my country. The thing is, we tried to do it through Guatemala. We even had the opportunity to have somebody there, but it's so incredibly expensive. And what would it be the first step in order to do that without having to go to the process of the foster? Because the problem with the foster kids is you get in love with the kids and you really get responsibility of them, and then they can take them away from you. And it's something my wife and I wouldn't want to get in love with somebody. Maybe they're going to take it away. But on the other hand, what would it be the first step in order to go to try to get into the process?
Good question. Thank you very much, Francisco. Jill.
Okay. To go through an agency that provides adoption services, a lot of the families that come to the villages do not want to take the risk foster to adopt situation, but a lot of children are free for adoption and would go in foster adopt until the adoption's finalized. So you set at a good, you know, I think most agencies are this way. You set the parameters of what you're comfortable with doing. The age of children you wish to be considered for, whether you are interested in a sibling group, and also whether you are going to accept any risk in any placements that are matched with you. So just because it's foster to adopt, there are a lot of children free who need homes that you could be considered for and be staffed to see if that is a good match for you. So I would really strongly suggest that you try to go to an agency that's close to where you live, call for about an information night, go in, get a packet of information, talk about the whole process. And I say try to go somewhere close to where you live because they will become your new best friends. You will spend a lot of time with them preparing for the whole journey.
Gil Michelini.
One thing, listening to Jill talk, don't listen or believe what Hollywood tells you about adoption, because those are not necessarily good stories of it's horrible and they're going to come and take the children away from you, because those don't happen. Most of the adoptions end very well. And what we hear on the news are the worst of the stories. Mm-hmm. Many of the adoptions work out very well.
I would just add to Gil's point. First of all, we talked earlier about cost. It was worth every penny and then some. I talked about the five-year untangling the knots. It was worth every moment and then some. But also these stories you hear in other states where biological parents come back. Indiana has some of the strongest laws protecting adoptive parents of any state in the country. The Kirsch law firm, I know, has worked closely with our General Assembly and others. So I could just not emphasize that enough, that if you're adopting domestically, let alone through foster care, adoptive parents have some of the strongest protections in America under the law right here in Indiana.
We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Certainly.
I'm actually at home right now on maternity leave with my six-week-old newly adopted son.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And I was enjoying listening, and I just wanted to bring up a side that I we haven't really discussed yet, and that is infant domestic adoption. And, of course, the entire side of this coin is the amazing birth families and birth mothers that have such incredible love and just a selflessness that they place their babies when they know they can't take care of them for a multitude of reasons, and they love them so much that they say, you know what, we want to give them a chance. And we worked with Christian Kirsch, you just mentioned them a minute ago, just had the most amazing experience, and our birth mother is probably the most amazing person we've ever met. This young woman was so wise beyond her years and just so incredible, and I just wanted to bring that up as an important part of this adoption discussion, is that the incredible love on both sides, both the birth family and the adoptive family.
Before I let you go, Stephanie, I need to tell you that while you were talking, I saw the heads just nodding up and down, almost like sewing needles here when you were telling your story. Thank you very much for calling us. Bill Stanjakiewicz.
John, you're a journalism leader, dean, professor, journalist. You choose your words carefully. Mm-hmm. Stephanie just chose her words very carefully, and it's a great message give out to moms in our local community when she said that mom who placed the child into our family. That is a key word, because people say, I'm giving up my child for adoption. And you're not giving up on your child. The word Stephanie chose was very intentional. And there is a message here for moms in our state that adoption is definitely a loving option to consider. A couple of years ago, I don't have the most recent data, but we used to place about 8% of babies into domestic adoption. Now it's about 0.8%. It is declined dramatically. And again, if mom chooses to raise her child at home, that's something as a community we need to surround her and give her and that child the support. We need dad involved, absolutely. But adoption is also a loving option for the birth mom placing that child into the arms of an adoptive family. I really just want to affirm Stephanie's comment there.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named Grant who says, what are the differences pro and con in working with an agency versus attorney through the adoption processes, and who are the prominent attorneys and agencies in Indiana? Gil's shaking his head. Bill's shaking his head. Jill, can you help us with this one?
I really cannot speak to how the attorney system is working for adoption. I usually hear it in reference to infant adoptions. Mm-hmm. My personal opinion, and I'm going to plug my profession, work with an agency, you know, like the Villages, like Children's Bureau, that have professional social workers who are licensed and trained and specialize in doing this kind of work. It is well sought after expertise.
And I would
Bill
just add, just as you choose your family doctor, perhaps, you know,
right.
And maybe one doctor really makes sense for your family because of the way they communicate or their bedside manner, maybe another doesn't. We work through Bethany Christian Services. Gil, you were telling me you work through families through international adoption.
So out of Evansville.
Wonderfully respected organization. The Kirsch & Kirsch Law Firm has a specialty in this area. You may know of an individual attorney who has a specialty in this area. But I would also reiterate what Jill said. The social work piece is huge. No matter what path you go down to and whether you have biological children or not, it's great to have that trained expertise speaking into the household before the child arrives.
Well, the other thing I think that I pick up out of this, too, is that we need to reaffirm anytime, you know, you're bringing a child into your family through whatever means here, other than perhaps choosing your spouse, that's about the most important decision you can make. So you want to make it with some care.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, we are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Antoine, welcome to the program. Antoine?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, good. Your question, please.
Actually, it was more so a comment.
Okay.
I just wanted to, I guess, talk to the fact that I believe it's, like, so important that you guys are getting the message out there and letting people know whether they are adoptive parents, which I am not an adoptive parent at all, but it's something that's in my heart and something that I've been thinking about doing whenever, I guess, I'm ready and my significant other is ready. But I think it's just really important that you guys are getting the message out there and letting everyone know, I guess, how it is from your perspective as being adoptive parents and knowing what to go through and what you may expect and letting others know that are out there and maybe thinking about doing this, like how it can affect their life in the good way, the bad ways, whatever way you may think, it's nothing compared to what the joy that you should experience.
Antoine?
Whether bringing in a child through adoptive or having a child of your own, like they said, it's a very big decision, but I think it's just very important that you guys are getting it out there and letting everyone know your opinions on this matter, because some people may be, I guess, a little hesitant to talk about these things, and it's not something that's really brought up much, but it's something that, like I said, it's in my heart, and I'm sure it's in a lot of other hearts out there.
Antoine, this is John Krall, and I guess when I hear you talk, you speak about this with real passion. Do you have some sort of personal experience with adoption?
No, not myself. I've had family members who I consider them blood family members who were adopted, and I've grown up with them and, you know, created bonds throughout my years, you know, until my adulthood. And I just feel that it's, one, there's a lot of children out there in need.
Uh-huh.
And two, I feel that if you do have that desire, that it's often good to hear other people who have had the desire and actually quench that thirst mm-hmm. that they may have had for, you know, sharing their love.
Thank you very much for the call and for sharing that with us, Antoine.
There's no problem. I thank you guys for actually speaking on this. I love hearing about it, and I love hearing as much as I can. And I'm sure, I'm sure there's people out there. If I'm speaking for them, I'm letting you know. Keep it up. I enjoy, guys, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Take care. Well, how much of that we've talked, actually, and just kind of alluded to, I think it's Jill who's used the term the adoption community during this. How much of this is a sense of community that you share with each other? I'll let Gil take the first bite at that.
It's been one of the great advantages of Facebook is to get to meet people from all over the country and even from Guatemala, people that work in the adoption community down there. But there are a lot of incredibly supportive people that are out there, and we've all got this common bond of having a child, in my case, from Guatemala. There's a huge Chinese group, Russian, Vietnam, every country that we're adopting from, a growing community from Ethiopia, as a lot more people are starting to adopt from Africa. And we all are trying to work together. We're trying to help each other out in understanding, because they're in each one of these children, there is one thing that kind of sets them apart. I know we've experienced this with my daughter, is there's a little bit of a sense of loss.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in Gemma's life that's missing. And it's nice to talk to other parents, because occasionally that'll come out, and there is definitely some hurt in her. So I would ask, hey, you know, fellow parent, what do I do in these situations? I know she's not upset with me. It's just there's a little piece there that's hurting.
Well, and it's that piece we talked about a little bit earlier about honoring the experience that also predates their arrival in your family. We are talking about adoption here on No Limits. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Linda, welcome to the program.
Hello, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
I'm doing well.
Great.
I don't listen to your show very often, or I don't hear very much especially about adoption.
All right.
But I have a very strong opinion about something I'd like to discuss.
Okay.
We adopted a child who was 5, and he had he was a family member. Because he was a family member, and because the social workers involved did not clearly state the parameters of the adoption, it created havoc, not just for a child, for the whole family, because we were given requirements like, you know, he can't have contact with his birth mom because of her problems. And you know what? His birth mom was my family, too. So those things need to be sometimes worked out, because it was a nightmare. I mean, I love this child dearly, but he had memories of his mom. Okay. He had lived with her for 5 years. He had been, and he had bonded with her. And I think if that break had been able to be clean, just a clean break, that we would have had more of a chance to bond with him. As it stands, it was not specifically stated that he couldn't see her, and at times he would see her, and it was such a problem. And I'm just wondering what your experts there think about familial adoptions, especially when the child has been with the family or his mother for 5 years.
Thank you very much. That's a great question. Thank you, Linda. And I hope you'll listen in the future.
I absolutely will.
Great. Thank you. Well, I'll throw that one to Jill. Budden.
Yeah, there is a very high level of what we call kinship adoptions and kinship care of children coming into the family. And it's a wonderful thing because generally we feel like children who go into kinship relationships are able to maintain some of their family bonds. But as she mentioned, it is very important to define those bonds and rules. And then there's a lot of therapy and things that need to go on to define how that's all going to work in the future for the child. And most children don't forget when they're five or they're older, and they have all those memories to deal with.
Well, and I guess we're getting close on time here, so I guess what I would like to talk about a little bit in that case, I mean, there is a possibility when there is an adoption that there will be some trauma that the child brings. How do you, as parents, deal with that, Bill Stanjakovich?
Don't know yet. Ask me in about 5, 6, 8, 10 years. A colleague of mine at a previous job is adopted, mm-hmm. and when he became a young adult, he wanted to meet his birth mother, and it caused some stress and discord with his adoptive mother, who's his mom, and who he still loves and honors as his mom. We haven't crossed that bridge yet with Samuel. Again, he's a Stanjakovich, a Guatemalan Stanjakovich. And
in America, great.
And you know, and he's going to go back. He said he's going to go run and be the president of Guatemala if our Constitution doesn't let him be president of the United States. And so we'll contribute to that campaign fund. But, you know, that we do wonder, you know, is there going to be a point where he says, tell me more about my birth mom. I do want to go back. And we'll do it lovingly. We'll do it supportively. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Well, go ahead, Jill.
I would really recommend that there is a wonderful resource. It's CASE, which has nothing to do with my agency or myself, but I was trained through them. And that is the Center for Adoption Services and Education. If you Google them, they have a website that goes and goes and goes. And it has all kinds of resources for adoptive families. And it talks about cultural issues. It talks about lifetime. It has a lot of young adults who are interviewed and share their stories of how things affect them later in life. And it is just a wonderful resource for everyone who's involved with adoption.
Do you have the URL in mind real quickly?
No, but take my word for it. Google it. You'll find
CASE is what we
should do. Yeah, it's a Center for Adoption Services and Education.
I feel like we could talk about this and people would continue calling in and sharing their stories.
That's exciting.
For another 2 hours. Mm-hmm. I really want to thank all three of you for spending this time with us. I'd like to thank Jill Budnick with The Villages. Jill, it's a pleasure having
you
on the show. Bill Stanjakovich, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, John. Keep up the great work.
Thank you. And Gil Michelini, thank you for joining us. I hope you'll come back, too.
I will. Thank you very much.
And we will be back next week for Thanksgiving Day. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.